And welcome to the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You can also chime in on the conversation via Twitter using hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to set the stage for the last and final preseason game. We're going to get to your phone calls as well as your tweets and go over the latest transaction and news related to the team. And Paul, let's start with the biggest news of the day. As it was announced right before we came on, the Giants have officially waived Owe Odighizuwa. This is a day after he was suspended 4 games for violating the league's performance enhancing policy. Jerry Reese issued a statement. He said, quote, "It is unfortunate that things have gone in this direction, but we wish nothing but the best for Owe as we all move forward." He was obviously the third round draft pick in 2015. There was a lot of speculation about whether or not he actually wanted to continue pursuing playing football earlier in the offseason. So I don't know necessarily if this is a surprise, but somebody that was still very young and had some upside in terms of contributing to the defensive line rotation.
Well, when he came out of UCLA, the word on him was that he was an outstanding run-stopping defensive end who, with the Bruins, held the point of attack extremely well. Excuse me. The question was going to be, how good could he be at the NFL level as a pass rusher? Now, the Giants projected his skill set to be pass rushing worthy. So when they took him in the third round, they thought they would be able to use him differently than what he was used in college and would become a fearsome pass rusher. Now, it never really happened for a variety of reasons, including a bunch of injuries. Let's face it, he did miss a lot of time in his first 2 years with the team before finally deciding this year when he came to camp that he wanted to continue playing football, and he's had a healthy training camp. But it just hasn't worked out for him, and it's unfortunate. And this is why we tell you folks all the time, you know, Bill Polian, the great Hall of Fame executive, has said, if you hit on 1/3 of your draft picks over the course of time, you've done a good job. It's really like baseball. You know, you got about 300. And you know, that's considered good. In most things of life, that's considered a failure. But not when it comes to drafting. And so there can be a litany of reasons why a draft pick does not pan out. And it includes injuries. It includes skill set. It includes mentality. It includes coaching staff sometimes. Sometimes it can be scheme. There can be so many different reasons why a guy does not live up to his potential. And unfortunately, Owe Odighizuwa has fallen into one of those traps, and his Giants career is now over.
4 games as a rookie, 14 games last season, and I think you hit it right in the nose,
Paul. In spot duty, to be fair.
Correct, but what I think hurt his progression as a player is, like any young player, you want to be on the field as much as you can your rookie year, even if it's in a special teams role, just to get a feel for the game. And the fact that he was sidelined and having to watch from the side and not be able to be with his teammates and on the practice field, you know, that could stunt your development very early on in your career.
It did, and if you got to know Owe at all, as I did when he got here, you understood he was a very emotionally charged guy, had great respect for being picked by the Giants, the history, the tradition. First thing he said when he got here, I've studied Michael Strahan and O.C. Umenyiora and Justin Tuck, and I just can't tell you how much I admire these guys and how much I've looked and studied their tape, and I can't wait to be, you know, the next defensive end in that room behind those guys. Tremendous respect
and enthusiastic
and enthusiasm for the Giants' heritage at that position. So his head was in the right spot, his heart was in the right spot, but there's no question when he got hurt as a rookie, it took a lot of the zest out of him. He really, you know, when guys get hurt as rookies, usually one of two things happen. Either they take a step back because it demoralizes them and really saps a lot of the juice out of their energy, or it galvanizes them and gets them so forceful and so determined, like, I'm not letting an injury stop me, and they grit their teeth. And they're like, I'm going to come back, boy. I'm going to beat this injury bug. No way in hell it's going to keep me down. And they become, like, possessed. Michael Strahan. Remember him?
I think I remember him.
Yeah. How about that foot injury as a rookie? Was on crutches. Came back and had a Hall of Fame career. Justin Tuck, Lisfranc injury as a young player. Came back, had a great career. some guys turn it around and use it as motivation, and they're able to galvanize themselves and become even better for it. Other players, the injury does more than hurt their body. It hurts their mentality, their psyche, their emotional makeup, and it sends them in the wrong direction. And they never become the player that they could have become. I think that's the case right here with Owe.
Now, somebody that relates to this conversation moving forward is Darian Thompson. Because remember, Thompson was limited to just two games last season. But what he talked a lot about this offseason is he stayed in the classroom all of last year as a rookie, Paul. So he was embedded with the team. He understood and digested the scheme. It seemed as if that kept him animated and that kept him mentally within the team structure that he didn't feel like an outsider.
Look,
I guess
I'm Italian, so I have no trouble getting emotional. You understand that?
Well, I was going to say that based on what you just demonstrated.
Okay.
Yes, I'm not necessarily
no
surprised.
Problem, no shortage there. So for me, if I got hurt, I'd be angry. I'd be angry at the injury, and I would make it fuel my fire. And I think Darian Thompson, from what I can tell you of being around him, he got angry. Now, I don't think he's Italian. I'll check with him. But
they
I don't think
he is.
Have to consult
him on that.
But I have seen fire in his eyes. I saw it last year when he got hurt. I've seen it this summer at training camp. He was angry about getting hurt, and I see him going upwards after his injury as opposed to the other way around.
Only if you suffered an injury, I can only imagine the mindset and what
you
would
happen. Want to be around me if
no,
I'm
not. I'm just speculating.
Trust
right
me.
Now. That's what we love to do on this program because I know I would never have concern about you mentally checking out.
Never.
No, that's never a concern. All right, well, speaking of injuries, before we open up the phone lines, let's go over the injury report from yesterday. Now, no dramatic new news. Brandon Marshall was limited, Paul, so he returned
coming
briefly
off the shoulder.
From the shoulder injury, correct. Odell Beckham still getting treatment. Mark Herzlich is still sidelined by the burner. Yes.
Coach did use a word. He did use a word, improving on Beckham.
For Odell Beckham, yes.
And
correct.
We need to say that because Coach has been, he pretty much been flatlined about Beckham the first few days of his injury.
Yes.
But he did say yesterday he was improving, so we have an adjective to give you now.
If you want to ride that, correct. Well, he was pressed on that subject.
He was.
Wasn't biting or giving much in addition to that.
But that's the first adjective we've heard in a week, so I wanted to make sure we got
yes,
that out
he
there.
Said optimistically it'd be great if Odell Beckham get on the field tomorrow, meaning
yeah,
today.
Well,
but we'll see whether or not wishful thinking plays out. But continuing with respect to the injury report, Michael Hunter still in concussion protocol. Eli Apple still dealing with the ankle injury. Duke Hinacho's got the knee. Keenan Robinson is also in concussion protocol. And defensive tackle Damon Harrison just had a rest day, so there's no alarming concern moving forward with respect to that. However, one player I didn't mention, Paul, that I want to get to before we open up the phone lines is Jay Bromley, who sprained his knee in the last preseason game. He did speak to the media. He does not think it's going to be a long-term injury, but would not necessarily provide a timetable at this point of when he will be able to return.
Bromley did offer a day-to-day comment and said he was extremely hopeful of playing against Dallas in week one. But as is the case with any of these soft tissue types of injuries, you really don't know about your availability until you're allowed to go out there and run and test it. You got to be able to put weight on it. You got to be able to run on it. And then you got to be able to stop and change direction. Until you do those things, you're not getting cleared to play. So cross your fingers. I mean, Jay said he felt a ton better even after only one day after the Jet game than he did the previous day. So, you know, he's really trying to be hopeful, but nobody really knows.
Now, this opens the door potentially for Dalvin Tomlinson, this year's second-round pick, as well as Robert Thomas.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking about this position all offseason. We've been wondering who's going to start next to Snacks. And it's interesting, Paul, if you look at the trajectory over the course of the preseason as well as training camp, we started with Robert Thomas emerging as the favorite.
Yes.
Then he gets hurt. Jay Bromley then emerges and starts leading the pack. Now Bromley's banged up, and now all of a sudden it seems like Dalvin Tomlinson could very well be
so
the favorite.
So you're wrapping Tomlinson in bubble wrap going up to New England.
That's probably, I'm sure, in the coaching staff's mindset.
I'm just trying to follow your progression here, that's all.
Well, I'm just saying that we've had three different defensive tackles that we've been analyzing constantly over the course of the offseason, and it seems as if every other week there's a new guy in the front of the pack. And a lot of it has to do with the injury bug.
Good thing is Snacks has been the steady.
Yes. Well, that's why he got a rest day. No coincidence, by the way, that he got the rest day yesterday because they want to preserve him. Good luck trying to wrap him in bubble wrap, by the way. I don't know if there's large enough bubble wrap to contain him.
That'd be very difficult.
Yes, that'd be difficult.
And Snacks I would not want to try.
Shape. Yes, no, I don't think. You'd have the enthusiasm to do it, but I wouldn't recommend you trying it. All right, but we will get more on the front of the defensive tackle spot to see who eventually will emerge and who will win the starting job as they get set for the Giants and the Cowboys. Jonathan Casillas, though, did mention that he's already been studying tape and he's been preparing for that matchup.
I think there are a number of guys who have peaked at some of the Dallas stuff because, you know, they do understand that they're on the team. I mean, even Coach McAdoo has said there's probably 50 players fighting for 15 spots on the 53-man roster. I mean, we could pretty much tell you 30-something guys, almost 40 guys who were pretty much solid. I mean, you know, Eli Manning's made it, okay? Odell Beckham's made it.
Going out on a limb there,
So there are some guys who you know have already started taking a peek ahead to Dallas. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, to be honest with you.
Not at all. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. All right, let's open up the lines. The festivities get started with none other than Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, what's going on? Hey, P-Dot.
Hi. Hello, Dre. What do you got for us?
Not much. I just want to kind of look at watch the game over and over and over again on Saturday's game. I've seen a lot. Let's get the elephant out the room. I mean, the offensive line, one thing my theory, tell me if I'm right or wrong, it's kind of like a defense. You want them, they'll bend but don't break. It seems like when our offensive line plays as a unit, bend but don't break, and give Eli enough time to get that ball out, which he did, what they did on Sunday, Saturday, against a strong front, they actually look really good. Do you agree, disagree?
There are two ways to grade an offensive line. First way is, how much push are they getting at the line of scrimmage? Are they owning the line of scrimmage? Second way you grade it is, are they doing enough to allow your offensive skill positions, your running backs and your quarterback, to effectively complete the plays that they're trying to get done? Those are the two ways to do it. The Giants do not have a dominant offensive line. They are not winning and owning the line of scrimmage. Push that one aside because that's not going to be a check in the box. The second one is what you want because that's what this line is capable of doing. Enough to effectively allow Eli and those running backs to run the offense efficiently. That's what they've showed, at least in this game against the Jets. Not so much in the first two preseason weeks, but they did show it against the Jets. They scored on three of their five possessions and had 12 first downs in the first half. Okay? That's running it effectively and efficiently. That's the box you want to check every week. Because if you do that, you could be a playoff team, especially with this defense.
And this was a good test for this offensive line, Dre, because of what the Jets present in terms of their front seven, especially with Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson. I also think that although the numbers are not startling in terms of the running game, there were a few lengthy runs in the last game, specifically one that Paul Perkins had. You know, Wayne Gallman seemed to get some production on the ground. Now, granted, he was in the game a little bit later on when the first team offensive line wasn't in. But just from the optics test, Paul, seemed as if they did get a little bit more holes opened up in terms of the ground game.
But I'm going to tell you, the most exciting run of the night for me had nothing to do with Paul Perkins and had nothing to do with the long run. It was the one-yard touchdown plunge by Orleans Darkwood.
Red zone.
Because how many times have you seen this Giants team go with a spread passing attack inside the three-yard line over the last 6 years? Well, against the Jets the other night, they got the ball down to the one, okay, on a Roger Lewis catch. And then they line up Orleans Darkwood in the backfield. Shane Smith, the fullback, is in there. He kicks out to the left, has an iso block on the linebacker, and obliterates him from the play. Okay? Evan Engram, a tight end, folds into Wilkerson. Okay? Wilkerson gets him off balance. Brett Jones pulls out from right guard, and then, boom, like a pancake, flattens him. And Orleans Darkwa waltzes into the end zone untouched from a one-yard line on a power running play that absolutely had me jumping so high I wanted to go through the roof. Because that, my friend, is something we haven't seen around here in a long time. That was a thing of beauty.
That was
the best running play of the entire night.
Converting in short yardage situations, which has been an area that has troubled this team. Now, on the previous red zone opportunity, Eli Manning threw three times into the right corner of the end zone. They chose not to run. But you're referring to that other possession where they did hit Roger Lewis over the middle, took a strong hit, and then on the one-yard line lined up and punched into a dark one.
And again, you must understand, the plays they're using in the preseason, they're experimental. They want to see what they can't do as much as what they can do. So I don't have a problem with the play selection on the three fades. I honestly don't. They want to just try it out. They want to use different guys, see if they can make those plays. That's fine. My point is, they did try to run it in from the one. They tried to punch it in. They tried to make a heavyweight slugfest out of it against a terrific Jets physical run defense, and they punched them right in the nose and slammed it in. That's a beautiful thing.
I got one quick question. Did we ever get an explanation in reference to the play that wasn't the play where a linebacker got hurt?
Yeah, New York was reviewing the review. Yeah, New York was reviewing the catch that was on the sideline, and they didn't get the communication to the field quick enough. Okay, it was under 2 minutes, okay, which is why it gets reviewed out of hand. And because they didn't get the communication quick enough to the officials, they allowed the next snap to occur. And, of course, unfortunately, Schwann got a fractured foot on that play, and Coach McAdoo was furious about it. It's like, oh, my goodness, a play that never should have happened, and we get a guy hurt on it.
Wind up sacrificing a body as a result of that, yeah. And McAdoo did address that at his press conference and his conference call the following day, I should mention, and he basically expressed the same thing, the frustration over a player getting hurt on essentially a
what
non-existent
a shame.
Play.
And I think that kid would have been a real good target for the practice squad. I really do.
Well, thanks for taking my call, guys.
You got it, Dre. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks for chiming in. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Bash in Ohio. Bash, what's happening?
How's it going, Lance?
Hi. Doing all right, Bash. What do you got for us?
I was watching the game over the weekend and stuff. Motherfuckers about the game. Our first team is excellent. I see as far as that scores work. But as far as hope, nobody want our first team offense, our defense get hurt because that second, it was still the two halves. That second half was horrible, going up 29-3 and then barely winning 32-31. Just hopefully our defense and offense stays intact. Wanted to make that comment. And wanted to talk more about injury bug as far as injuries and stuff and some suggestions and ideas as far as that. I see the cornerback position we're kind of tight on as far as Michael Hunter being hurt and Eli Apple being hurt and everything. And
Well, they have made a few transactions, Bash. I mean, keep in mind, they've made two moves. They actually brought in Daniel Gray, who's an undrafted rookie who was with the Arizona Cardinals in June, and they also claimed Tate Glover Wright off waivers from the Eagles. So they've brought in some other options at cornerback. Now, there's no guarantee these guys are going to make the roster, but you can clearly tell because of the injury bug and the concussion issue for Michael Hunter, they're experimenting and looking elsewhere at other options because right now Dante Dion is literally the only guy it seems healthy and alert in contention for that fourth cornerback spot.
No, that's true. And as far as what happened in the game the other day, you know, most of those guys who are on the field in the fourth quarter, or at least a great deal of them, probably won't be here in another week. So I wouldn't worry too much about the fact that the Jets came roaring back and made that a close game in the fourth. It really isn't that relevant.
Right. And I want to bring up as far as, like, you brought up the quarterback that we brought in and stuff. And I think about it first, I haven't brought him up a lot. I know, Paul, you brought up Brandon Flowers. I want to mention him as far as how his injury and as far as I know you're talking about the concussion. But we haven't heard a name as far as bringing up as far as the Jets family and stuff as far as Grievous. Is he a possibility for the Giants as far as any concussions? Any thoughts as far as Grievous coming in as far as the end of training camp as far as being a body? Is he any interest?
Let me just say this. I haven't talked to Darrell Revis or his people. He is currently a free agent.
Yeah.
He's probably of the mentality that if he's going to go anywhere, he's going to want to be at least a number three corner.
Of course.
Or possibly compete as a number two. Regardless of what you think about what he has left, he's going to think in his mind that I should be a two or a three at the very least. I don't think he's going to want to talk to a team that is looking for a fourth cornerback. Just my opinion. Because I think Darrell Revis has a very high opinion of himself. And I don't see him waltzing into a place and saying, I can't wait to play for you guys. I'm the number four corner.
Yeah, playing a complimentary role.
No, I don't see him doing that. I just don't see him doing that.
I think that's a bit of a stretch. And, Bash, we're going to let you go. Bad connection, so we're going to leave it at that. But I would agree with you, Paul, in terms of Revis having to know his mindset to really determine whether or not he'd be willing to go to a team. And you know the Giants are set at their top three cornerback position, so at best he's looking at a fourth cornerback spot. Also,
there's no question. There's no way he's better than the top three the Giants have.
They're not going to elevate him, so that would be the player's mentality of whether or not he'd want to accept that role. By the way, on that subject, and you know, maybe this is going to come back to bite me because it's not like we're dying to hear from Charlie, but Brandon Albert, I don't know if you saw the story, the Miami Herald had a story. A source told the Miami Herald that Brandon Albert does not want to pursue and continue to play football anymore. So if that name is brought up again, I'm just giving you the little tidbit of information.
I never suggested they should
call
him.
Well, no,
I'm
not saying you did. I'm just telling you to store it away in case somebody wants to speculate about whether or not that should be a player to
pursue. Because, you know, it helps that the player wants to play before you can talk to him and sign him.
Well, it's slightly important that the player would be motivated to want to continue to play. Yes, I think that's slightly important.
Although I think Tom Coughlin already figured that out.
Based on the fact that they're moving forward with Cam Robinson at their left tackle spot. Yes. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Bam Bam is in Rockville Center. Bam Bam, what's happening?
How you guys doing today?
Hi, Bam Bam. What do you got for us?
Paul, I gave you 2 weeks off after our on-air spat the other week, so I hope you're ready for me today.
Okay, I don't remember what kind of tiff we had last time, but go right ahead.
Okay, so if I'm going to call and complain when he plays poorly, I have to call when he's doing well. I have to say the last two games against the Browns and against the Jets, I thought Flowers had some good outings.
Yeah,
I thought the line in general played better against the Jets. You know, to give the back some lanes to open up.
All agree.
Even the sack he gave up in the Jet game was on a stunt. And frankly, if the quarterback she had enough time to get rid of the ball, Eli probably would have gotten rid of it by then.
Fair comment.
I'm gonna make it quick. The one call I've heard a couple times, the Giants are lacking depth at corner, and. You know, there's not a lot of teams that have their three top guys. How many teams have a fourth and a fifth corner that you actually have legit confidence in? So I actually have a client walking into my office right now, so I'm going to hang up and I'll listen to you guys later. But just wanted to just kind of hear your thoughts. I've heard that a few that they're lacking depth at corner. I just don't see how that's possible with their top three guys. Thanks.
All right, Bam Bam. Appreciate the phone call. Good luck with the client, by the way.
Well, let's just make this really simple. When Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie got hurt in Green Bay during the playoff game, the entire complexion of that game changed. You know, Corey Sensabaugh was trying to fill it on some snaps. Trevin Wade tried to fill it on other snaps. And you know what? Aaron Rodgers found two touchdown passes in the second half against that duo. I mean, it wasn't real pretty. So you need to know that your fourth corner is at least capable and competent. You're right. Nobody in this league can say that their fourth corner is going to shut anybody down and be that good. There aren't enough corners to go around in the NFL that your fourth corner is going to be a top-line guy. But he's at least got to be able to hold his own and be decent. You can't all of a sudden say, we got three top-notch guys and our fourth guy is down here. That drop-off is really dangerous. Now, I happen to be a big Dante Dion fan, and I've said that ever since they signed him from Boise State, last year as a rookie free agent. However, as much as I love Dante Dion, I still believe that because at 5'9", he is a really good reserve slot corner. I'm not sure that if pressed into duty against an outside receiver that he's going to win a ton of matchups in this league because there are too many guys who are 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", going up against a very short cornerback. That's a tough matchup for him to deal with.
And so, we saw that in the preseason game against the Bills last year.
Last year, it was not pretty. Now, he's been better this year. Definitely a lot better this year. And I'm still saying he needs to be on the 53. But right now, if he's your fourth corner, he's going to have to play slot. And you're going to have to make sure if somebody gets hurt, the other two guys are playing outside. Because otherwise, it's kind of sketchy. Michael Hunter is in concussion protocol. There's no timetable for that. If he can get back, I think the Giants think he can be an adequate replacement on the outside should they need to call on him. But other than that, it's slim pickings.
Which is why it would not surprise me when all of these players get released across the league. I'm sure there's going to be a veteran somewhere in there because teams ultimately going to have to sacrifice some talent that maybe the Giants will look into bringing in a veteran late in the game.
And
it's possible.
For the flip side, for every person out there who says, well, what are you going to get on the waiver wire? It's all going to be garbage anyway. Here's what you have to remember. There are different styles of defense that different teams play in the secondary. Some teams play cover three. Some teams play cover two. Some teams play press. Some teams play bump and run. Some teams play cushion. There are different styles and schemes of defense, and that specifically goes to how defensive backs are asked to operate. So it is entirely possible that you could pick up a corner off the scrap heap from a team that plays a different scheme defensively where he doesn't fit and he's worthless to that team. But on your team, because of the scheme you play, he suddenly becomes a capable player. Understand that, folks. Literally, one man's trash in the secondary can be another man's usable part. I'm not talking about a star player.
No, we've seen that constantly.
But I'm talking about a usable part because of the difference in the scheme. So it is possible to grab somebody.
Well, I'll give you the perfect example. The Patriots, they acquired Coney Ealy, the defensive lineman, if you recall, this offseason, okay, in March. Never actually played one single game for them in the regular season, and they just waived him. The Jets picked him up. Perhaps he's a better fit for the Jets, and he didn't fit into the Patriots scheme.
And that was the knock-up in New England. Yeah. They said flat out, it's not that he's a bad guy. He doesn't fit our scheme at all. Now, maybe they should have known that before they brought him in, but maybe they thought he could adapt, and he didn't adapt. Now, you know, so
you can make an argument that he wasn't an ideal fit for Carolina, too, and Carolina used the second-round pick on him as well. And the Patriots wound up giving up a second-round pick. Sometimes you have high expectations. He gets into the scheme. He's not a fit because of what your defensive coordinator runs, and you send him on your way. And maybe he is going to find the spot with the Jets. It's very possible. So I would agree with you. I also would agree with the larger point that the caller made, Paul, and you alluded to this, that if you do take a look at the NFL landscape, and it's always important, I know this is a Giants-focused show, but you do have to take into consideration the rest of the league and the trends around the league. You'd be very hard-pressed to find that even half the league says that if they had to put in their fourth and fifth cornerback, if they lost their one and twos, that they would feel as if they also have a pair of shutdown corners sitting on the bench. Case in point, I mean, let's look at one of the teams to me that I think has arguably the best secondary in the NFL, aside from the Giants who are in contention, the Denver Broncos, right?
No question.
Is that a fair?
Absolutely.
So Denver right now, in terms of their top three corners, you have Chris Harris, you have Bradley Roby, and you have Aqib Talib. Okay? Most teams, they'll take those three guys in a heartbeat.
Sure.
Then, if I start naming other guys in this secondary, the average casual fan has no idea who the hell I'm talking about, which is fine.
Right now.
I'm not expecting everybody to understand these names, but if you're going to sit here and tell me that the Broncos would feel great if Brendan Langley and Chris Lewis Harris and Marcus Rios have to step in for one of those three, that there may not be a little bit of a drop-off and there may not be other quarterbacks in the NFL that are going to look to take advantage of those matchups. I mean, once again, I think that's a big stretch. So if we're looking at one of the top teams in the NFL that clearly doesn't necessarily have polished veterans behind their top three, you can understand it's very hard for the rest of the league to follow a similar script.
And here's the thing. You could get away with a subpar fourth corner if you're forced to play him and you're going up against a team that's primarily run-oriented or maybe doesn't have an elite quarterback because they may not be able to take advantage of your Achilles heel. But if you're in a playoff game in Green Bay at Lambeau against Aaron Rodgers, guess what? That Achilles heel has a big red light on his head, and Rodgers is going to find him on every snap.
I think that's fair, too, to take into consideration the talent on the opposite sideline. When you do look at the Giants cornerback group, as I mentioned, picking up a veteran I think is a possibility. Michael Hunter, you don't know a timeline with concussions. Luke Kuechly is a guy I always reference, the Panthers linebacker who missed the majority of last season because of a concussion that lingered. So, I mean, right now we could sit here and speculate. We're not medical experts. We don't know when he would return. But what I will say, Paul, is by listening to Ben McAdoo, he seems to have a great deal of confidence, as does the coaching staff, with Michael Hunter, that if they can find a way to keep him on the roster without having to sacrifice something else, even if he's not healthy, that they see value in him and that they have confidence in him being the fourth corner.
It does appear that way, that here in his second season, remember he was with the Giants last year, had a cup of coffee in some games, they believe he has come a long way. And can be a competent number four or number five, if you want to call him that. Again, he and Deion are kind of interchangeable depending upon which slot or outside guy they need in a given week.
So that's something to at least keep close tabs on. It's just like Spags is very high on Dante Dion, and when a coach is high on a guy, you know, that gives them a little bit more leeway. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. We'll get to your tweets in a little bit, as well as hashtag Giants Chat. He is Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Leo in North Carolina. Leo, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Lance? How you doing, Paul?
Doing well, Leo. What do you got for us?
Just want to talk a little about Jordan Williams and the competition with Oladizua now, you know, being off the team, got released today. Do you think this is a great opportunity for Jordan Williams to, you know, step up and actually make the team?
Well, a young guy has made the team before, so I wouldn't necessarily rule it out, and I'll reference a guy named Kerry Wynn. And Kerry Wynn, I remember that offseason where, you know, he was out of Richmond, he was undrafted, and they brought in Israel Adonijé, the proven veteran, and all of a sudden Kerry Wynn made the team. So I don't think it's a stretch to say he has a chance, but, you know, if we were to play the numbers game, Paul, I don't know what you're thinking in terms of total defensive linemen. Are you thinking 9? You thinking 10?
Max is 10.
Max is 10.
Max is 10.
Okay, so JPP and Vernon, we know. We pencil them in. So now we're down to now 8 spots to fill.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, Snacks makes it 7. Whoever starts next to him, let's say Jay Bromley. Okay, so that's 4. We got to count for the
Tomlinson.
Starters. Tomlinson. Okay, that's 5.
Maybe Thomas.
That's 6.
Okwara.
7.
Taylor.
That's 8. Okay, so now we're looking at 2 more spots.
You're not going to get rid of Moss. You just drafted him.
That's 9. So 1 spot perhaps to toy with. And then do they also feel, hold on, if they feel they want depth elsewhere, in their mind do they say, well, Devon Kennard can come down and play on the defensive line.
Uh-huh.
He's that jack-of-all-trades linebacker/lineman. By the way, they've been using Okwara at the linebacker spot, too. And Ben McAdoo said part of the rationale behind that is when we do the numbers game and we're crunching the numbers, maybe they think they don't need 10 because they have versatility,
mm-hmm.
and they'd rather keep an extra tight end or a fullback or something else. So I would say, to answer your question, Jordan Williams, it's still very difficult based on us speculating about the numbers, but we've seen young guys find a way to get on the team.
Okay. I mean, that sounds great. I mean, the guy's from my hometown, so, you know, I want to see him succeed, and that's all I got for you guys.
He is practice squad eligible.
Appreciate the phone call, Leo.
Okay. Let's keep that in mind. So the Giants, if they see something they like there, and by the way, I also believe he can be a backup long snapper, even though he's a defensive lineman. I believe he has that ability. So practice squad is certainly not out of the question for him.
Which also, based on what we said, speaks volumes of the competition you have on the defensive line, which is certainly a good thing to have. It's not a bad situation, but when you are put in those situations, sometimes you have to make difficult decisions, and you may have to part ways with a guy, and you hope that he passes through waivers so that you could perhaps offer him a practice squad spot. And we've seen in past seasons, there's a lot of players that have been on the practice squad, Paul. They know the system, and they're called up midway through the season. It's happened time and time again.
Because injuries happen in the NFL.
Yeah.
We all know that.
So that's another reason why it's valuable to be able to retain guys that were with you during training camp as well as the offseason. Eric is in Brooklyn. Eric, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hi. Doing well, Eric. What do you have for us?
I actually want to talk about some cornerback depth. I think you guys touched on the subject. And
yep.
But beforehand, I just wanted to say, were you guys impressed by the speed of the first-string defense versus the Jets?
The speed of the defense?
Yeah, like...
Let's
compared
put it this
to
way.
Last year, they just seem a little bit quicker to the ball this year.
I think
I don't know what it is.
I think the word you want to use is playing speed, not necessarily pure speed, because they're playing faster than they did last year because now it's the second year that the bulk of this defense is together. And I think Landon Collins is the best example of this because in my mind, I think he's taken another jump to a whole nother level because of his anticipation. He was a great player last year, a finalist for NFL Defensive Player of the Year. But this year, if you watch him out of practice and you watch him in the first 3 preseason games, what you're finding is because of his recognition and anticipation, he is getting to the receivers and the ball carriers and to the point of attack a lot quicker than he ever did before. And it's because of mentally how it's speeding up in his head. And so he's being able to react much earlier in the play than he did before. So I would be very careful when you say the Giants are playing faster or you're saying that they have a speedier offense or defense, I think they're just playing faster because they're anticipating better. So be careful with that.
More comfortable.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Sorry for that.
No need to apologize. No, it's just a matter of clarification.
That's how I see it. And you certainly are welcome to see it another way, but that's what I see.
No, that's what I meant. I think wrong term. But I do see, like, little glimpses of, like, Sean Taylor in him. It's crazy because for his size, he's naturally fluid, you know? Like, I saw him get the interception for the touchdown. I was like, that was so innate.
And why do they make that pick? Because he read the play, knew exactly what was coming, and anticipated the flight of the ball, cut in front of the receiver, and he was gone for a pick six. That's not because he suddenly got faster feet.
No, that's not
what happened. He saw the play ahead of time, anticipated, jumped the route, and he's gone. If Landon Collins can do that consistently in year number three, folks, he's going to be in a running for NFL MVP. Forget about defensive MVP. He might be one of the guys who could say he deserves to be MVP of the league. That's how scary good he could be.
A side note on that play, and we'll let you continue here in a second, Eric, is what I found interesting is after the game, Landon Collins said that Brandon Marshall was giving the defense tips on some of the routes that the Jets wide receivers run. No, I'm not making this a true story, and he actually, Landon credited Brandon Marshall for preparing him for that route. I think it also helped, by the way, that Christian Hackenberg, I think, was staring him down for a year and a Sunday, and then some. But, hey, still got to give Landon Collins credit for the play. But it's interesting because you always wonder when a guy comes from a team, is he able to help and provide assistance and some tips? Sometimes that works out, even in a preseason game. And there you go, Brandon Marshall assisting Landon Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and JPP actually is so impressive this year. His first step is crazy. He's so fast. He chucked that one offensive lineman like he was a bag of groceries. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is all in. He is fully committed to becoming a ferocious defensive end again. Remember when he was all pro in 2011? That's a long time ago.
You know,
in his career, he's only had two seasons with double-digit sacks. I say he gets double digits this year.
Well, if he stays healthy and he looks this impressive throughout the season, and, I mean, he and Vernon are complementing each other very nicely. I mean, you can make the argument, and I'm curious your take, Paul. Based on his health, I mean, this may be the best we've ever seen, JP, especially post-injury.
It is very possible he will have his best season ever. It is possible.
He's certainly positioning himself to do that.
Yeah. So, and also the other person I was really impressed with was Didi. He was really doing some work out there.
You're talking about Dante Dion, I'm assuming,
right? Yeah, Dante Dion.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, Didi's a new nickname. We haven't heard
that one. I hadn't heard that one yet either.
I just needed clarification. I thought you were maybe referring to Didi Gregorius, but we're going to stick to football on this program. Yeah.
You know, Dion, here's what I will tell you about Dante Dion. They list him at 5'9", 163 pounds. Now, I haven't weighed him, so I don't know if that's a legit 163 or not. But here's what I will say. For a small guy, boy, does he pack a lot of punch. He plays with the kind of heart, intensity, and aggressiveness that a six-foot corner would play with. He is not afraid of anybody. Now, there are going to be times he's going to be overmatched by a bigger receiver, and he's going to get beat, and there's nothing he can do about it. It's going to happen. But here's what I love about this kid. He will fight. He will scrap. He will do everything possible. And if he gets beat, he's going to get up and dust himself off, and he's going to get right in your face on the next play, and he's going to try to stop you again. And it doesn't matter how big you are. It doesn't matter how fast you are. Dante Dion wants you to know that he has been in a fight, and he's going to make you earn everything you get against him every single time on the field. That's why I love this kid.
Yeah, I mean, that interception was really impressive. I mean, it shows a lot of fundamentals instead of, like, concentrating on running beforehand.
He actually concentrated on
the ball.
He anticipates well. He's got terrific hands, and he closes on the ball extremely well. He's got wonderful ball skills. If you watched his tape at Boise State, which is what I did when the Giants signed him, you could not help but love this kid.
Yeah, and he played with Darian Thompson too, right?
Yes.
He also played with Jay Ajayi, was on that team, the Dolphins starting running back.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's funny because I went back and I looked at the video, and Eric, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I went back to look at the last time Dante Dion had a pick six in a football game because he was asked about this after the game. Now, off the top of his head, he said it was against UConn when he was with Boise State. He did have two that season, but he had one later on. He had one in the Fiesta Bowl against Arizona. And Dante Dion, yes, he didn't remember that, but he had a pick six. He returned it for a touchdown. So he's had a knack for finding the ball and be able to return it down on the other end. And, you know, when you were talking about his fight, what reminded me of what you were discussing, Paul, was every time Spags is asked about Dante Dion, you get the feel that he sees exactly what you're talking about constantly on the field as well as in the meeting room, that he's got that passion, he's got that desire to overcome maybe some of his shortcomings because of his stature.
Dante Dion always has a smile on his face. He loves the game. He loves everything about football. And that passion, you know, that's got to come from within. You don't teach that to somebody. And that's what gives him a chance to be in the National Football League.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. JW is in Florida. JW, what's happening?
Good afternoon. Oh, good morning, rather. I got a comment and a question. My comment is that the offensive line, I think Flowers is playing pretty good. I think if he goes down, it's going to be one of the biggest problems that you have, because I think you got to make two or three moves to adjust for him. And I think you just go with what you got, and I think you work from what you have. What do you think about that?
It's a double move, quite frankly, because we've discussed this on the show in the past. If Flowers goes out for whatever reason, injury or otherwise, it seems to me the two most logical moves, move Pugh to left tackle, and then put Fluker, or for that matter, could be Brett Jones, in at left guard. That's a double move. You can't avoid it. It's a two-piece move. Or maybe you put Bobby Hart at left tackle, and then they're going to have to put Fluker at right tackle or Bisnolvati at right tackle. That involves two moves. It's a double move no matter how you look at it, because there's nobody on this roster who can just step in from the depth chart and play left tackle for this team. Chad Wheeler is not there, folks. I mean, he may be a legit prospect. He may have a chance to grow into that role, but he's not there today.
Oh, I see. What about the two rookie tackles between Wheeler and the sixth-round pick?
I just addressed Wheeler. He's not there. And Bisnolvati is a right tackle.
Yeah, he's more of a right side guy.
He's not a left tackle. Again, at some point, maybe they play with giving him a shot over there, but he's not a left tackle.
Well, for now, I think you got to go based on what we see. Bisnolvati's been utilized on the right side. Wheeler's been used on the
left side.
So to say that Bisnolvati would be the first man up to fill in for Flowers, God forbid, on the left side,
unlikely.
I think would be highly unlikely, yeah.
Okay. Now my comment is, and I don't know whether this actually would work, but I think the backup quarterback situation for the Giants is weak at best. Would they ever have released the two that they have now and just have Webb as their backup for, like, the first game and see what's on the waiver wire, see what they can pick up to maybe strengthen that a little bit better? Would that ever happen, do you think?
Ben McAdoo,
just for one game?
Ben McAdoo has said that this number two quarterback competition is still open, that neither guy has jumped ahead of the other to take the job. So I'm going to simply say to you, anything's possible at this point. I happen to like Davis Webb a lot. I don't think in a perfect world you want him to be the number two, okay? I don't think you do. I think you'd like to have him be a sponge as the number three. But if one of these guys doesn't step forward, and I don't know what's going to get cut next week. Quarterback is one of those positions where you're not going to usually find something useful on the waiver wire at the very last minute.
Yeah, they're not going to get rid of seasoned, polished veterans who are going to be serving as backups. Highly unlikely that happens.
So in all likelihood, you're going to have to deal with one of those two vets as the number two. In all likelihood.
Well, and here's the other thing that I wanted to add to what you said, and this goes to your point, JW, and I'll use Matt Cassel as an example. When Tony Romo went down 2 years ago and the Cowboys were sort of exploring their options and they weren't content with Brandon Whedon, they acquired Matt Cassel from the Bills. Matt Cassel was brought in right before the bye week. And they were talking about after the bye week, he'd feel more and more comfortable with the offensive system. And Matt Cassel spoke towards the end of the season and said, you know what, since I was thrown right in the middle of the season, I never really got a great grasp and a feel for my fellow personnel as well as the system. So the reason I bring that in is you may not be impressed with what you're seeing out of Geno Smith and Josh Johnson, but just because you go out and get a different quarterback, even if that's a polished veteran, there's no guarantee that that quarterback is going to fully assimilate himself with the offense even by the time the season comes to an end. So you have to ask yourself that from a coaching standpoint, is it more beneficial to hold on to a guy that at least knows our scheme, knows our system, as opposed to taking a chance with somebody off the street?
You know, there's no Rutledge, there's no Hostetler, there's no Cannell, there's no Scott Bruner, There's none of those guys here. You know, you have what you have.
Okay, I got you. It was just a thought because
no, it's
I
a
thought
fair
for
question.
One game, if they were somebody that he could, you know, be the backup and then revert back to the
it's
number three and
it's
be
a
sponge.
It's a lot to ask. It really is.
Yeah, I think it's a lot to ask for Davis Webb, and appreciate the phone call, JW, and I think it's a lot to ask for the veteran that you bring in. And, you know, what he was alluding to, Paul, was based on the rules that are in place, you wouldn't guarantee the contract if you bring in the quarterback perhaps after week one. And we see a lot of teams do that. They wait to bring
in
the established veteran. No, but what I'm saying is maybe you don't have to necessarily also pay him as much, depending on how the contract worked out in which he was waived.
I've said this before. It was my bold prediction of 2 months ago. I think Davis Webb will take some regular season snaps for the Giants this season. I still believe that. I'm not moving off of it. I'm not sure exactly what the circumstances will be, whether they're in a blowout one way or another, or maybe because at some point in time during the course of practice this year, they believe he's the best guy to be number two. That might happen too. He might just flat out win the job. I'm not going to put anything past him because I love this kid. I think he's a heck of a prospect. So the door is open there as far as I'm concerned. I would not close it on him at all. I would not put any limitations on him at all. But in a perfect world, you don't want him to be the two.
Nugs is in Kansas City. Nugs, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Doing well, Nugs.
First of all, I want to say I wouldn't mind never seeing Davis Webb. I wouldn't mind seeing him go the Ryan Nassib route because that means Eli's still doing his thing.
Okay. Eli takes every snap. That's okay, too.
I called in yesterday and I said that I know it's early. I know it's the preseason, but I feel like our offense is still gonna struggle this year. And I know I can't see much in preseason. I'm in Kansas City. I don't get to go to practices or anything like that. So I just want somebody to talk me off the ledge because I feel this is a championship caliber defense, but I don't want to see a situation where if a team just happens to maybe score 20, 22 points on us, it's over because we're good for one big Odell Beckham play a game, but going by that formula from last year, we're going to need 2-3 Odell Beckham plays or big plays like that, and I'm just not sure if this offensive line is going to be able to hold up. I see Flowers is doing a little bit better, but then I don't know. I just saw Jerry get knocked on his keister, and it just made me feel like, man, you know, that Eli's under pressure. You know, he gets skittish, throws it up.
All right,
and I'm
going to try to make this easy for you because we could sit here for an hour and a half and dissect all the intricacies of the Giants offense and why we think they're going to do this and that, but I'm going to make it real simple. Last year, they struggled offensively, right? We agree?
Yeah.
Okay. They won 11 games and went to the playoffs, right?
I'll take it.
Okay. The defense looks like it's even better than it was last year. Yes?
I agree.
So if they are no worse offensively, they should still be a playoff contender. Yes?
A contender. I agree with you in theory.
Okay.
In theory. But
what else do we have?
How many 10 to 7 games are we going to win? How many 13 to 10 games are we winning? I can't really count on my defense. I know they look better than they are, but this is the NFL, and now offensive coordinators have – tape, and they do their, they're getting paid millions of dollars on the other side. How many one-possession games can we really expect to win?
Let's just be real simple here and looking at the offense when we try to figure out what they're going to be. We think Shane Vereen's going to be healthy, and we think he's going to play this season, unlike last year. So when you replace one of the best third-down backs in the NFL with virtually nothing, you take a huge hit. And people need to understand that loss last year when Vereen got hurt was a big deal. Okay.
True.
They did not have a fullback last year, and their running game was about as bad as it could possibly be. Right?
True.
So now this year, Vereen is back. It looks like they may have a fullback in Shane Smith. And we think that Paul Perkins is on the way up, and we think that Dark was healthy, and we think that Gallman's got some talent. And we think that Red Ellison is a really good signing at tight end. And we think that Evan Engram is really good. And we think that Brandon Marshall is really good. I guess what I'm saying is there's no way this offense could be like it was last year. It's got to be better. I've just given you about six reasons why they've got to have a better offense, and we already know the defense is going to be better. So you can sleep at night now. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay.
Right. I just had to talk to you, Paul. I just had to talk to you, man, because I got the first game of the season coming up, and I've been in knots. My stomach's just been in knots because I'm surrounded by big-time Cowboys fans. I'm surrounded by Chiefs fans, and you know we got to play them this year. And I'm just saying, if we roll out the product and get smoked, it's just going to be real tough for me. So
anybody who just rolls out of bed, anybody who just rolls out of bed is going to get smoked in this league because nobody's good enough to sleepwalk through an opponent in the National Football League. They're just not going to happen that way. The Giants are going to have to earn everything they get this year. Let's make it clear. They're not mailing in a ticket to the Super Bowl. That's not going to happen.
No, not at all.
If they're going to get there, they're going to have to work their butts off. But the point is they're good enough to do it.
Do you think they will be able to have at least an 800-yard rusher this year? I mean,
they should.
Like an 800, 900-yard rusher this year. That would really, really help us.
They should.
I think a lot of it depends on how the carries play out, you know, whether or not somebody truly becomes the workhorse. But, you know, you would hope that from what we've seen a little bit in the preseason and the fact that Paul Perkins is in all likelihood going to be the starter from day one as opposed to last year where he took over in the final quarter of the season, that he could gain some more continuity and momentum and can obviously be more productive. I don't think that's asking for much to get an 800-yard rusher.
No.
I think that's an optimistic view, a reasonable view, I should say.
You've always been high on Paul Perkins, man. I mean, I'm still going to take the wait and see approach with him, man. But, you know, I would like to see us give, if Dolphin can stay healthy. I don't know. It just seems like I just got a feeling about that guy. But I know he's gonna be in the rotation too. But anyways, I'm at Starbucks. Let me grab my coffee and I'll talk to you guys.
All right, Nugs. We'll let you catch a coffee. I tell you, we interrupted somebody's business meeting today. We interrupted the coffee line. It's nice to see that we have people that can balance and multitask. That's
I just wanted
positive.
To get some sleep.
So, well, I think the coffee may help him a little by the time the day comes to a halt if he's alive and alert for the majority of the day thanks to the coffee early on.
Wow.
We will see. And I don't understand why he's so concerned about the Chiefs. I mean, they just lost their starting running back. Jeremy Maclin was let go this offseason. Kansas City has a lot of question marks. So I wouldn't be too worried, Nugs, about the fans in your neck of the woods.
I think he's worried because the Giants are going to pull the Chiefs off of a bye week. And Kansas City has a phenomenal – Andy Reid is
usually very strong coming off
of a bye.
Yes.
So that is not an easy game, even though it's at MetLife Stadium.
Understandable. I'm just saying that most teams have question marks. I think it's fair to say.
No doubt.
I don't think the Giants are in a unique position with respect to that. All right, let's head back to the lines. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
How we doing, fellas?
Doing all right, Nick. What do you got for us?
Paul Perkins. You know, I mean, put a lot of running backs out there. If the line isn't doing their job, where's he going to go? You know what I mean? When he has great vision. You saw it on Saturday.
Yeah.
And Brett Jones did a really good job on that block. And he, you know, I saw Richburg, you know, hit him and then go to his left. Go help somebody else out, and Brett Jones took care of the rest, and he put his guy down on the ground. And that was Muhammad Wilkerson, I think, wasn't it?
Let me put it this way.
Put him right down on the ground, and Perkins got that big run right up the middle.
I have talked to the Giants running backs, and they have all told me that they would be more comfortable if there was a fullback available to them. So at least on some of their running plays, they had someone lining up out of the eye with them.
Now, I said that yesterday, Paul. I called and I've said it a lot of times.
It's a fair comment.
I like Shane Smith.
It's
he
a fair
plays
comment.
Special teams.
Yes,
I want to keep him.
And I would say right now he's making a strong bid to be on the 53.
And yeah,
when
I
you
think
consider
so.
that he can provide some blocking out of the eye, when you consider that Ellison can help blocking on the edge for either one of the tackles if necessary, you have to think that those running backs are going to have a bit more room to run than they did the last couple of years. You just have to. By default, it's got to be. You got more beef on the field.
Exactly. I would have liked to see Fluker a little more just to see the unknowns, but I liked what I saw. It's going to only get better. And the other thing is you and Armani Toomer were talking, you know, and you guys pointed out something great that the way this defense is, see, everybody's coming back, like you said earlier, Paul, just about.
Yeah.
And now you got second-year players like Eli Apple, you know, as long as he stays healthy. Everybody's coming in to Spags defense, and that's what makes this whole thing go like it's going. They look faster because they understand. Everybody knows their assignments. They know what they need to do. And if they keep this up, they're going to be scoring points. So that's just going to either shorten the field for our offense. And you got Darko, who we've been talking about, and you saw a little something the other night. He's going to be the short yardage back, you know?
You would think so.
Perkins is going to get the job done.
You would think so.
And then you got Gallman. So we'll be all right. But the biggest thing here to me is the defense. This defense can be wow.
Remember one thing that you've alluded to, but I want to make it very clear. One of the best things that you can do for your offense is to give them good field position. And with Brad Wing, who's a very, very good punter, okay?
Oh, yes.
And with this defense, you know, you'd like to believe that the Giants offense is going to have even better field position than they had last year, because this defense seems to be right now more in position to make bigger plays and maybe to get more turnovers. That usually leads to better field position. And once you get better field position, that also means you can open up the playbook more. And when you open up the playbook more with a wider variety of weapons, which the Giants have now added in the offseason, you get it? It's a domino effect. There's no reason to believe that the Giants won't be a better team. The problem is they're going to have to be better if they're going to win 10 games, because the schedule's a lot tougher.
Yeah, the schedule's a lot more challenging. There's a lot more travel. And here's the other thing. I don't disagree with your assessment, Paul, about that. You know, if you're feeling more comfortable in the scheme, that maybe you're going to be in a position to get more takeaways. It's just, as we know, it's a very fluky statistic, though. You can't bank on what you did last year is going to happen again. I've seen teams, they're at the top of turnover differential one season, and then they hit rock bottom the next season. That's more of a reason why I don't put a great deal of stock and substance into that statistic.
I agree with you to some degree that turnovers can be very haphazard. Yeah. I would not discount that at all, but you would like to believe that you're going to get better play and production out of Eli Apple in the turnover margin.
Well,
you'd
because
like
they're
believe.
More comfortable in the system. Yeah, that I buy.
Deion Thompson made a living made a living out of creating turnovers at Boise State, where he's the WAC all-time interception leader. So you'd like to think they're going to get some more. But
guys,
it's not guaranteed.
Certainly have the personnel capable of doing it.
Yes.
It's just a matter of whether or not all of that can definitely translate into consistent takeaways. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Yesterday, John was saying back, you know, about coaches unleashing. And I was saying with Lawrence Taylor, you know, there's two different positions, but they're on defense. And we both know what Lawrence Taylor was. But Parcells gave him that trust. He knew what he could do, and he just unleashed him and let him go. That's what Spags is doing with Landon Collins. He knows he can trust him, and that's why you're seeing what you're seeing, because Landon Collins just, he's out there like he's thinking of this in his sleep, like, I know exactly what I got to do if this happens, if that happens.
Yeah.
He's there.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to watch him week one.
Agreed.
I cannot wait. But sky's the limit, fellas, you know. Defense, I think they're going to definitely, you know, be scoring points every game.
Well, that's a big task.
That's
even
a lot to ask.
One of the best defenses in the league. Keep in mind, nothing to take away from their performance, and appreciate the phone call, Nick. But, you know, I'm always a big fan of saying take into consideration the opponent. When you're going up against Christian Hackenberg, you should be able to do that consistently. When you're going up against Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger and the caliber of the quarterback changes, I don't think you can assume that you're going to get two pick sixes every single game. But they were opportunistic last year. If guys are more comfortable in the scheme, there's no reason why they can't at least be in a position to make consistent stops and change field position and take pressure off of the offense, which I think is the goal moving forward this season. I want to get to some tweets. A number of you who can't get an opportunity to get to the phone still weighing in on Twitter at #GiantsChat. AJ Marshall at AJ Marshall 3. Dante Dion and Travis Rudolph, are they both locks to make the 53? They both had good games on Saturday.
They would be on my 53, but I don't get to make that call.
Well, Dion's in a great position because of the injuries at corner. And I think that he's shown some flashes at special teams, but Ben McAdoo has certainly indicated they'd like to see a little bit more consistency.
Yeah.
And as far as Travis Rudolph is concerned, I mean, it's like what we were talking about with the defensive lineman, Paul, earlier. Do they keep five wide receivers? Do they keep six? How confident do they feel that Tavares King will get back to full health, considering he performed very well in that playoff game and late last season? Mm-hmm. You know, Rudolph, I think, played very well on Saturday, but I wouldn't classify him as a lock either, considering the other options at wide receiver.
He's a lock for me, but may not be
your
coach.
Well, no, I'm not saying that.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I can tell. You get your favorites. I don't want to disturb Paul's mindset when he gets his favorites in terms of the makeup. This is an interesting question by at Gruen Ben. He says, why not start Jones and sub in Jerry on third and long in the two-minute drill, obvious passing downs? He's asking, it's not necessarily for the Giants, he's asking, why don't teams sub offensive linemen more often during the course of a game?
Because every offensive lineman will tell you that continuity is the most important part of what they do.
Absolutely. I think you need to take that into consideration. And one last one, this comes from at Nico12561. If Flowers goes down, he doesn't think there's necessarily a plan B, but Donald Rosen chimes in and says he noticed Biznavati really did not get a lot of snaps in the last game. Is that because the Giants do not see him in their long-term plans? Can you read into that?
I don't think you can. I think, you know, Coach McAdoo said himself that he was just trying to get as many looks as he can in game number three, and he will do the same thing in game number four, too. He just wants to see as many snaps as he can get out of these guys because they got to make decisions. You know, now I think Biznovati has shown enough in camp, and he was a draft choice. I think it's a pretty safe call that based on the depth chart, he's probably going to make it, I would think. But, again, I don't make those calls, but I would think he's going to make it.
And remember, they got another preseason game, and they're not going to play a lot of the starters. So Biznavati could see an awful lot of work,
I would assume,
on Thursday.
I would think he would.
More of a reason why maybe you shouldn't necessarily read into the last game against the Jets, because clearly they want to get the starters in as much as possible.
Yes, they got a full half out of those guys.
Correct. So this is a game, I think, where Biznavati could maybe get a little bit more game action. All right, that's going to wrap up things for us here on today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Certainly appreciate everybody tuning in. We're going to be back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern as we continue to get you set for the final preseason game and roster cutdown. Thanks to all the phone calls. Thanks to all the tweets. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.